funny shit that took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
All right, so welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show. Just me and Conan here today. Poor Stevie McDonald gave me a ring an hour ago, and waiting to hear this for a sob story. So he missed last Thursday as well. He bought a new car 3 weeks ago. New car. And the turbo went in it 2 weeks ago. He got a fix last Thursday, and he's driving down the road here today to come do the podcast, and the turbo goes again. Cry me a river. A brand new car.
I tell you that.
He's mentioned to me on more than one occasion.
It doesn't affect his air sport rules, so we can get there all right.
Is he on air sport now?
I have no idea.
All right, okay. Keane Ward is on air sport, so I didn't know Stevie.
He was on there. BBC, was it last weekend? He was doing Tyrone Kildare. I think it was BBC NI he was doing it for.
All right.
But you wouldn't get that in RT player, though.
No, yeah, because you don't know how to record up there. But anyways, there's only one place to start today, Conan, and that's Jim Gavin versus RTE. And this is a bizarre story. So Jim refused to do interview with RTE last weekend after the Donegal match. And the week before, RTE didn't actually have cameras there, which is another whole can of worms that we won't get into. But he refused to talk to RTE Radio. So this is only coming out this week. And as the story goes, is Dublin wrote to RTE requesting footage of their games for analysis. So RTE have cameras at it and they wanted them. Now, RTE provide this service during the championship to teams, and I don't think they even charge for it. I think they just, maybe they do charge for it, I don't really know. But anyways, there's a lot of teams avail of this by taking RTE's coverage, their cameras behind the goals, whatever. And it is a bit of a resource. Like, I mean, if 10, 12 counties are looking for footage from a weekend, you know, someone has to go burn those CDs and send them on out. So, like, I mean, it's a resource. Mm-hmm. Anyways, Dublin wanted the footage of the league games this year. RT don't generally provide them during the league. And Jim Gavin has gone to the point of refusing to talk to them because they won't do this, not just for Dublin. They won't give any county. And another thing about this is they only have highlights rights for the league, so they don't want to give out the full match, because I don't know RTE's reasons, but, like, I mean, it seems very reasonable to me. They give them out during the championship when they have the highlights rights, or when they have the full rights, and that they, as a rule, they don't do it during the league. But Dublin have completely spat the dummy out here and imposed a media ban on RTE.
Yeah, and it's probably the right call from RTE as well not to give it out, because we complain about how little coverage they give all the other divisions outside of Division 1. So if they start giving all these clips to Division 1 teams, there's a lot of counties there that are going to be left out and feeling more screwed over than Jim Gavin is then, because if Derry suddenly want, you know, footage that RTE are giving Dublin, but, like, you know, there's no Derry games to give them. So,
and you would think with all these resources all these teams have that they would be recording their own game, because they obviously might have something they need to focus on in that game.
I assume Dublin do. You, what are they looking for?
You see, for a lot of championship matches up in the media area, a team from the backroom team will be up recording the match themselves on their own, like, I mean, and they would be able to get that footage off RT if they wanted, but they had their own camera. Now, you don't know what that camera is focusing on. Is it focusing on just trained on the defence to be able to see off the ball runs? You know, you don't know what level of sophistication this is being used, but you would imagine that they would be able to record this game themselves. And, like, if RT said no. But anyways, this is the point I want to make on this. Do RT really give a monkeys that Jim Gavin doesn't want to talk to them? Outside of the optics of the best team in Ireland's manager not wanting to talk to them, and this on the back of Mickey Hart for other reasons not wanting to talk to them, this is absolutely irrelevant to RTE. What is the point in talking to Jim Gavin after a game? Like, Jim Gavin is using a weapon that's not a very strong weapon. Like, I'm on a ban from Jim Gavin for a while. I don't care. Honestly, I don't care. It makes no difference to the podcast here, because what Jim Gavin gives the media is nothing. It's unusable. I can't even use his audio to like, you'd like to maybe use a talking point that he might generate and then let's discuss it. It's so banal and so boring that there is nothing you can even use it for. I don't care that he doesn't. Yeah. And RT shouldn't care either. No media should allow these threats, you know, change any sort of stand they make on something.
It's a dangerous road in a sense. I don't really care either. I know where some journalists come from where they think, oh, this keeps happening and then no one can be held accountable. We can't ask Jim Gavin about the Jeremy Connolly thing. Now, it doesn't happen every week where you're trying to uncover these dark secrets of, you know, the GAA. It doesn't happen all the time, but there is that somebody needs to be there and held accountable and ask questions that the public want answered. And it's happening in rugby at the minute now.
That's,
you know,
right. And you see Tony O'Donoghue and Martin O'Neill, Martin O'Neill treats Tony O'Donoghue, who's only asking, okay, he might ask some awkward questions. I don't think Tony O'Donoghue's been in any way disrespectful to Martin O'Neill, but there you go again. It's this kind of attitude, and it seems to be in vogue to treat the media like they're an absolute pest.
And that's why I think you're right. I don't know what the media don't need these people. They can talk about these people themselves, and actually it helps those people like the managers, like players who, you know, might be accused of diving, or it helps them to come out and give their side of the story rather than everyone else chime in with their opinion and analysis. Like, and Joe Schmidt, say, in the rugby world, like, he's banned newspaper interviews now. You know, not. But I would ask, what does the world really need from a second batch of Joe Schmidt quotes? You know, he's already given us boring quotes. We don't need the same old shit.
He's dull as well. Yeah. Now, in print, obviously, his quotes might be a bit better, but his delivery in interviews, it's just dull. And then you have this Irish boxers under promotion, which is the most bizarre thing I've ever come across, because a boxing promotion, I don't know what kind of business model they have, but a boxing promotion depends on the media to work with them to promote what they want. So, look, I'm not even going to get into that. That it just doesn't make any business sense to me that you would disclude people who, if you're a promotion, think of what promotion means.
But like, I'd be very surprised if Dublin aren't recording these things from all different angles themselves. Like, they are a team who depend on zonal work defensively and offensively. Yeah. So why the hell would they not be recording them themselves?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why they wouldn't. And maybe it's different angles that they want to kind of maybe get, that they might be going straight on. It's hard to know. But, like, I mean, these post-match interviews, they're very interesting to me, because I spent 2 years on the sideline in my previous job, maybe 3 years on the sideline trying to grab people for interviews. And, like, you get some good ones, but then you know the ones that are an absolute disaster. And always on the sideline, you get them when their blood would be racing a little bit, and you maybe catch them and they might actually let their guard down and maybe say something, like give you a bit of analysis from the game or what they thought of it. But if, like, Jim Gavin always wouldn't give you an interview on the sideline, he waited till he went in. Eamon Fitzmaurice was something similar. Eamon Fitzmaurice is a very interesting one, because Eamon is as boring as Jim, but he's not as obvious as Jim about it. Jim just has a smug smile on his face and he knows what he's doing. He doesn't care. Eamon is a little bit more charming, but tells you just as little. Like, Eamon Fitzmaurice, if you notice Eamon Fitzmaurice's post-match interviews, they all follow the same pattern. So he's happy with the performance, but there's some aspects that they obviously need to work on. He says this in every post-match interview. There's obviously aspects of the performance that we wouldn't be happy on, but we'll have to go away now, you know. And then you say, what aspects were they aiming? Like, which Norm, I've heard Joanne Cantwell doing it, like I've done it myself. Ah, well, you know, there's things in the backs we wouldn't be happy with and things in the forwards, you know, vague. And then he says, well, we'll have to go away and look at the video and we'll have a better understanding there. Just listen out for this. He does it all the time. He does it all the time. And this is just the way it goes. But they don't care. And, like, I always remember Jim McGuinness. He was brilliant. He'd actually give you a tactical insight about what he worked on in the training field and what they're trying to do. And it's like, geez, that's great. It did them no harm.
Yeah.
Like, but the new thing now is to say nothing. But this is the thing, point I'm going to make. Eamon Fitzmaurice and Jim Gavin, because they give so little, they can't hardly use this as some sort of a bargaining chip to try and get what they want. Jim McGuinness could. Stephen Rochford gave me a great interview last year. Like, he'll be honest, wear his heart on his sleeve a little bit. Like, sometimes he bluffs off as well. Mm-hmm. But lads that are honest, they can say, you're not getting an interview, and I'd actually go, Jesus, like, he's always great. But these fellas that give nothing, you don't have any kind of, you know, bargaining chips here.
Yeah, like, the game's changing media-wise, like, and it is a case of adapt or die. For, like, you know, managers and counties, they do not longer need the media. It's not back 100 years ago where newspaper was the only way to get stuff across. They all have their own channels now. They can put out their own videos. They can do whatever they want and manipulate words and stuff and, like, sort of set it up. But likewise, the media don't need these people anymore. They can write whatever they want. They can actually tell you what happened rather than some manager bluffing you off. They don't need them.
Yeah. And the gas thing, I think you made this point on the podcast before, is So Jim Gavin won't really come out and say the reasons for this. This is just a ban. So me and you are on this podcast now and we're speculating, would they not record it themselves? What's RTE doing? So this is causing more of an issue here than if Jim Gavin just came straight out and was more honest in interviews and said, look, well, I'm not talking to RTE because of this. And, you know, it's just, it actually creates more problems. It
creates a vacuum and then clowns like me and you fill it.
There you go. All pundit, you could, like, if maybe if managers... said more in interviews, you might not have the David Bradys in this world coming up with absolute. I'm not going to put us in the same league as that, but you get the point I'm trying to make. But look, we've probably maybe done too much, because a lot of people listening as well, like when people work in the media complain about not getting interviews, a lot of the general public have no sympathy on the media. They're like, oh, will they ever shut up? Like, I mean, the media doesn't come out well whinging about them not getting access.
I sort of roll my eyes as well when I see the media whinging. I'm like, oh, who cares? Just write your own opinion on it.
Yeah, okay, so we leave it at that, because no one listening outside of any media really give a shit. Right, Tiernan McCann, geez, a nasty injury. So the scan, he had a scan after the weekend, and I was surprised at this because I thought it might have been a head injury, because he kind of bravely dived in when and I thought that it might have been his head, and it was a scan revealed that he's a crack to his kneecap, so he's definitely out for the rest of the league. There's just something about the kneecap.
Sounds horrible.
Oh my god, it just sounds absolutely horrific. So he's out for 6 to 8 weeks, and it's awful news. So that's a disaster for Tiernan, who's coming off a couple of brilliant years and started the league again. One of Tyrone's almost like Mr. Consistent now, where you're getting a 7-8 out of 10 out of him every day. Pulled a left-footed point. So I talked to him last year on the podcast about how he's trying to perfect the outside of the right. When you're right half-back, you need two shots in your armoury, probably. The outside of the right and then cutting in on the left. Maybe he's starting to work on the cutting in on the left. So look, listen... No, Tiernan's a big fan of listening to the show, so if you're listening, Tiernan, driving from Dublin to Tyrone to get physio on that kneecap, keep the head up, you'll be back soon enough.
But that's the thing, when he was on last year, he gave that story, and it sort of hit home with a lot of players who do travel, but he's going 2 hours back from work in Dublin to go to Garvahe Training Centre and then come back 2 hours at night to be back for work the next day. But then he made the point that it's not just the travelling, then I have to do the foam rolling to make sure I'm all right to train, I have to get me eating right and stuff, so he's basically sacrificing 2 days a week just to get back for training. And for all the abuse they would have taken, and I'm actually fed up every time I see his name now. Somebody asked him about diving and I'm fed up seeing that now, because he's done so much more, and I'm annoyed that I've even brought it up.
But I thought my interview, not just because I do an interview, that was a year later, and the way he answered that question really should be the end. That should be just parked.
He was up again recently
and they were asking him again about it,
and it's like, ask him, he should have won an All-Star last year, ask him about that. Ask him why is it so easy for him to hit the outside a little bit shot. But for all that stuff, it's like he actually is just a proper football man who'll do what it takes to be the best he can be.
Exactly. So listen, we'll see him back for the championship, I'm sure. Jamie Malone is a really interesting one, because we know what happened. We talked about this on Monday, is there was an altercation between himself and Shane Stapledon. Whether he pushed him or ran into him, we're not too sure. Shane spent time in hospital but is okay now. So anyways, the interesting thing about this is he is being charged, Clare appealing his suspension. So he's been given a 2-match suspension, and the 2-match suspension is rule 5.28 to assault an opposing team official. Now the reason Clare are appealing this is the GAA really don't make things easy on themselves, because Jason Ford got into an altercation with Davy Fitz and pushed him. And because there was so much goodwill towards Jason Ford, and everyone was like, he shouldn't get suspended at all, and it was unfortunate because Davy was the one kind of out on the field and everything, they changed that, which it was an altercation with an official. They changed it to contributing to a melee. We've talked about the melee and everything. There's only two people. A melee is more. So now Tipperary want to find out a definition of a melee. This is just such random stuff. Why was Jason Ford's knocked down to contributing to a melee, and almost the very same thing of, with a team official, Jamie Malone is being put down for the 2-match suspension, which is to assault an opposing official. So you can see why Clare are going to appeal it, because what the GAA did with Jason Ford, and there's precedence there to only get it knocked down to a melee. It's just very, very messy.
Is it because Fitzgerald came running onto the field and it was more of a... I don't know, like, what is the big difference? And that's,
it's hard to know, but, like, I mean, this is the thing. I don't think the GAA helped themselves by helping Jason Ford out by the one-match ban. I think Jason Ford should have just been told, you're okay, forget about that. But
the GAA don't help themselves in general. Like, you go through the rule book and it is, it's crazy. Like, you know, something like kicking someone or striking with a hurley, you just assume that it's a longer ban, it's 2-match ban. But then if you look at it, kicking and striking with minimal force is 1-match ban. So they just create all these grey areas everywhere instead of just saying, if you kick or if you use a hurl, like, you're banned for two games, go away. Like,
yeah,
you know?
And Killian O'Connor only got the one game, didn't
he? Yeah, because an elbow was only 1-match ban, apparently.
Right.
You know, so you can run around elbowing people and it's a minimal 1-match ban. Like,
yeah.
So, yeah, that's what he's going to get. That's in the same category as striking with an arm or a knee or a hand.
Right. So striking with a fist or striking with an arm, which like a clothesline might be only one match ban.
Spitting on an opponent, 1-match ban.
Well, that's outrageous. That's absolutely outrageous. So in fairness, at intercounty level, you don't see that very often. Thank God. Brian Howard played Sigerson last night. So it'll be interesting to see whether he gets that scholarship or not. Obviously Dublin are playing this weekend, so he's able to play Sigerson. DIT went down to NUIG by 15 points to 212, and UCD beat UUJ, the perennial underachievers in the Sigerson Cup, after extra time, 18 to 113. I just wanted to mention, because Brian Howard, I wanted to mention, keep your eye out for Brian Howard's sidestep. I don't think we mentioned it on Monday, and like, he's got such light feet, he's almost like a Jaff Allen kind of style of a pronounced sidestep, where he makes it's very dramatic the way he does it, but like, I mean, he has a fair old bounce from one leg to the other and moves his whole body to try and, like, brings his whole body one way and then just moves it back. Yeah. You don't see it as often. Some players are good at it, but I was surprised that a defender had such a sidestep, because usually you don't really have to, you know, you don't really need that when you're a defender.
Well, he moves well, and he was obviously around the half forward line against Donegal, and, like, you know,
he played wing forward, so
he's very light on his feet for such a big man, like, and he just comes striding through, like, through bodies. Like, I was sort of slagging him off on Monday, just saying, oh, he's not going to make the championship team anyway, and there probably is a big chance of that, but he's going really well, in fairness to him.
Yeah, no, he's going really well. Right, the reason I wanted to bring up the Sigerson Cup is because this is just shocking stuff altogether. And, like, I mean, I'm not being overly dramatic by saying this is shocking stuff, because I've played Sigerson Cup, I've won a Sigerson Cup, I understand how important Sigerson Cup is to players in college. The benefits of meeting players from other counties, learning from them, making friends with them, getting information from them. Like, I mean, you create a great bond with fellas from Sigerson. You live in each other's houses. You spend so much time knocking off classes during the day together. It's an unbelievable bond. So Liam Silk and Kieran Malloy both qualified for the Sigerson final last night, because they're both playing with Liam Silk's with UCD and Kieran Malloy's with NUIG. The Sigerson final is fixed for 3:30 this Saturday, and the All-Ireland Club semi-final between Moorfield and Carrafin is fixed for 2:00 on Saturday. Now, we've talked on the podcast a lot about this time of the year being really difficult. We've obviously had the Sigerson versus Intercounty, two incredibly important competitions in the calendar, overlapping, and all the mess that's gone along with that. Brian Howard, we've mentioned Clifford, we've mentioned Sean O'Shea, we've mentioned all these fellas, and it's a disaster. So now, what do you end up having? You have a third one. At maybe the third most important competition, the All-Ireland Club, at something players value. The main, obviously, the All-Ireland is the most important one. After that, then, you can have a toss-up between Club, Sigerson and a National League medal. And I'm saying
Club, probably.
I would say Club. But then again, like, the Sigerson's so important. I would say Club, actually, yeah. And then the Sigerson and the National League. A lot of lads would actually put the Sigerson ahead of the National League.
Yeah.
So you have these three of the four main competitions in the GAA, you have overlapping at the same time. Not only did you have them overlapping, you have them fixed on the same day. You have two, like, honest to God, like, I mean, this is just wrong. It's so wrong. It's wrong that Liam Silk and Kieran Malloy can't play a Sigerson Cup final. Like, I mean, get your head around that. They can't play with their Sigerson Cup final, because another competition is fixed for the same day that they have to play in. They have to make a choice between two of the four most important competitions, arguably number two and three, they have to choose between. Like, to actually even explain that to anybody outside of GAA, like, it's just so bizarre.
And because they're playing in a competition which would have started back in October or September in Galway, like, you know, they're at that club competition and it's still going for some reason. And this isn't a consequence of, you know, bad luck with weather and games getting rescheduled.
No.
These are two
this is
big fixtures that were fixed a year ago or whatever.
On the same day. Like, we're not even saying a day one after another, to which we would be complaining about anyways, to say, Jesus, they have to play Sigerson, they can't even celebrate, and then they have to play an Aran club or vice versa. This is not even affording them this opportunity. This is a blatant two fingers from the association to these two players who value and have a huge bond, like I said, with their Sigerson teammates, and they have to turn around to them and say, lads, we can't help you win this. NUIG, who haven't won it in a long, long time, I think it's 2003 or something. It's just,
haven't been in the finals 2003.
They didn't even win it then. They haven't been, and now they have a chance. Well, UCD obviously be strong favourites, but
such underdogs. They're doing so well. They beat UCC in the quarters. They're absolutely flying out of nowhere almost.
So it's Kieran Malike obviously can't say to his teammates in NUIG, I don't get it. I just don't get it. And we all know that the CPA, and all they want to do, the CPA aren't trying to rock any boat here. The CPA just want to sit down with the GEA, the GPA, the Sigurs, the third level competitions, and fix the fixture so that this is not arising. So the players don't have to pick teams, so they're not being dragged in every direction, so they're not having to play a game on a Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday, Wednesday. They want to fix this. When you tweet about this, the amount of universal support, and that's something I'd rarely get on Twitter. it's true. But it's when you say fix this fixture, stop doing this to these players. Everybody agrees. Everybody. Nobody would say you're wrong on that. It's not even a debate. This isn't even a one side against another side. This is the whole GEA community against the GEA on this. And when are they going to listen to the whole GEA?
And what this does is it shines a light on the fact that I would say that the third level competition isn't even taken into consideration for any of this stuff. When they're scheduling the National League, they don't give a shit about Sigerson Cup. When they're scheduling the All-Ireland Club, don't give a shit about Sigerson Cup. And that basically just fits in wherever, in this case, on the same day. But those Wednesday night games as well, it's crazy. So they actually don't consider it at all when they are planning the fixtures. I know it's a tough job, but we're trying to help them. Everyone in the country wants to help them, and they're not listening or being receptive to this.
Let us help you.
Help me help you.
Jerry Maguire. But that's true. Let us help you. Let the CPA help you. If you're not able to do this, people have ideas and ways that we can fix all this. It looks easy and logical to a lot of people, but it doesn't clearly look logical and easy to the GEA because they're refusing to fix this. And I don't know, let's just hope. I really think that the spotlight has been shone so much this year with the Sigerson versus National League, and now you've got an extra layer of the club and these lads not being able to play Sigerson, and you've the Brian Howard refusing to play Sigerson, and you have the Kerry lads getting injured because of fatigue, muscle injuries. I think it can't go on next year without this time of the year being fixed next year. I really don't see, there's no defending them. Now, having said that, while I've criticised the GEA, here's a nice feel-good story, Conan, because here's a tweet from Sean Hackett. He's the GEA president of Provincial Council of Britain. And he tweeted out, massive congratulations to Scotland GEA. Huge moment for them turning the sod at the 3.8 million Clydebank development in Glasgow. And that's happening tomorrow on the 16th. And he hashtags Unite the Clans. While the GEA gets a lot of criticism, 3.8 million given to Scotland GEA, you know what I mean? That's and it's always the case, and I defended the GEA recently when Joe Brawley and these fellas were talking about finances, and I don't want to get into finances because I don't know enough about it, but I know that while the GEA make an awful lot of money, I know that a lot of that is ploughed back into the association in games development and also capital projects. So you have O'Moore Park getting $1 million 2 years ago to bring it up to the standard. Now you can make the argument saying, give us a few bloody matches now just to fill it up. You have Park Talton's going to get it as well. These are made possible by huge grants that the GEA give towards county boards, and they have to bring up their own finances. And I saw Brendan O'Brien from the Examiner asking, will Park Talton even be needed? And there is an argument for that, but then again, the Super 8s, and you'd have Meath knocking on the door of that, and you'd have a lot of teams knocking on the door of that. If you're going to get a better bigger high profile games in the summer, they will all need 20,000 stadiums, more modern stadiums. In the Super 8s you have the home games and the away games, and if in the future, please God, we have a championship structure that allows teams at their own level play each other in the summer. You might have big games in your home. You might have a home and away basis, you know. So, like, I mean, obviously these stadiums, while they're not needed too much now, it looks like, are underused. Like, I mean, that money that the GAA put into all these stadiums around the country, maybe all they have to do is change the restructure and then they actually get more use out of it.
And Muir Park would have two Division 4 teams playing each other, so that wouldn't help.
Yeah, and it'd be 1,000 there.
You'll rethink this shit. The Scotland one is very, you know, like a feel good story, but it's very poignant because anyone moves away from home, they do get this like stronger identity when where they're from, and they throw themselves back into the GAA again, and it is just sort of who you are, and you get more proud of it and stuff like. So anybody living in Scotland and around the world will be delighted to see something like that.
And Roy Slip as well, it's a lovely stadium over there now. Like, I mean, and I know Kieran Deely, the London manager, has been complaining recently about their training facilities, but maybe that's the next step. I think, like, and we heard Greg McCartan saying that trained out on the side of pitches. That's at club level, but I believe the London senior footballers train on a school soccer pitch with soccer goals or under 12 goals or something. You know, they're still at that level.
I'm passing over the bar only.
That, like, which is a disaster. But, like, I mean, one step at a time. London are actually making waves now, and I'm sure that the GAA will look after them. You know, in time, give it time. Everybody wants everything now. Right, listen. Up next, we are going to talk to Offaly's Kerry manager, Stephen Wallace.
Dear, great to finally get to interview you.
Oh, really, yeah.
Why
is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and you want to be, if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just hatching inside either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that. You know that yourself, Woolly.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Yeah, well, that's neither here nor there.
All right, delighted to say Stephen Wallace is on the line now. He's the new Offaly manager. He's from Kerry and he drives 3 hours to training and 3 hours home. Stephen, are you mad?
I suppose, look, anybody that's got the GAA bug is probably a small bit mad because, as you well know, you don't get a whole lot of thanks for it. But look, it's a love, and I suppose it's a form of an addiction. So, look, we do it because we love it and we enjoy doing it. And look, the driving doesn't bother me, to be honest. Look, I suppose I'm on the road all my life myself, you know. So, I mean, a county like Kerry here, if I was to head back to Dingle and home, I'd be up in Kilcock and home for a period of time, you know. So, yeah, look, it is what it is.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, you won All-Ireland Intermediate Club title with Ard Firth. So, I suppose when an intercounty team comes calling, if you want to make the next step in management, you know, you're not going to turn that down.
Yeah, look, I suppose my success was documented, you know, with the club lucky enough to win an All-Ireland Intermediate as a player and also managing the team as well here in Arfurth, and was with the Kerry Juniors. Then looking at a successful stint with them, you know, we ran an under-23 team, you know, as a development squad, as a feeder team to the senior squad, and look, that worked out pretty successfully for us as well. And look, the next step then, I suppose, look, is to get on the senior inter-county role. And look, my name was just mentioned and bandied about with a few counties, you know, a lot of it without truth. But, you know, when you sit down with good guys from Offaly, you know, Vinnie Caffey there, Finbar Cullen, Paul Mullen, you know, good genuine GM, and, you know, with the best interest of Offaly at heart. And look, they want to progress a project. And look, I suppose you know, we ticked all the boxes from both parties, and yeah, delighted to be involved.
Yeah, so that I was reading that it was a committee of the former players, Vinny and Finbar Cullen and these fellas, that recommended you, and like that must be a nice feeling to be identified like that from players like that. How did that conversation go? Was it and would they have interviewed you, or was that passed over to the county board to do that part?
Yeah, look, I Tommy Byrne, the county board chairman, was present at the meeting as well. You know, I suppose it's do you call it an interview? And anytime you're having a chat about GA, you know, I suppose it's hard to say you're being interviewed because you're talking about something, you know, that you love talking about.
Yeah.
But, But yeah, I suppose, look, Vinny and Finbar, you know, would have played, I suppose, you know, when Offaly were kind of, you know, the top level in Ireland, you know, they were playing Division 1, they were, you know, getting to Leinster finals and what have you. And look, I suppose, look, Offaly have had a fall from grace, but when guys like this are sitting across the table from, you know, guys that, you know, you'd have watched on TV as a young fella, you know, when Offaly were Offaly. And yeah, it was a great honour, I suppose, to be recommended by them. And we'll see how we get on now, Colm, after that. I suppose hopefully I'll live up to their expectations.
So you have three Kerry men on your backroom team plus you, is that right? So you have Billy Sheehan, who I know well, he's coaching the team, you have Brendan Keeley and you have Brian Egan. Do you have anybody from Offaly, yeah, or is having a fresh look from the outside more of a strength?
Yeah, look, we didn't purposely sit down and decide to just go outside, and nor did we purposely decide to kind of, I suppose, look it up with Kerry people either, Colin. But Paul Mullen is on board. You know, he'd be the Offaly selector in the backroom team. Paul played with Offaly himself back in the day. You know, a good solid Offaly man. You know, the team secretary be an Offaly man, and the kick guy. Known through the GA circles as Frosty is another Offaly man, but after that it's all outsiders, I suppose, predominantly from Kerry. You know, Billy probably maybe better known to Offaly people as a Leash footballer, but look, I grew up with Billy. Billy's a Kerry footballer to me, you know. And you might disagree with that. But,
Billy's had more clubs than I've had, so that's saying a lot.
Yeah, more clubs than Tiger Woods sort of thing. But look, Billy's passionate. Look, Billy's in coach, and you know, I suppose myself and Billy get on pretty well, because I suppose maybe there's a half a streak of madness in the two of us. But look, he's serious about what he does, and you know, he puts hours and hours of work into training sessions and training modules, and would be very diligent, you know. And I suppose, look, you know, he's plenty of time in his hands as well, because like his wife Marie minds all the kids, and he works as a school teacher, so you know, he's plenty of time that way, you know. But no, look, Billy's a massive career ahead of himself as a coach, and you know, he'd go far. Look, hopefully what we'll do with Offaly will be a success, and that'll be, you know, maybe a starting point on the ladder for him. Then Brendan Keeley was a no-brainer. Brendan recently retired from Kerry. You know, you're bringing a former all-star into the squad, you know, which, yeah, you know, gives the lads a lift that we're serious about what we're about. And the goalkeeping is it's such a big part of the game now, Colm. You know, I mean, Cluxton has, you know, he's revolutionised the importance of a goalkeeper, you know, with what he's done with Dublin. And you know, I suppose that's what we're trying to aspire to, you know, to get a goalkeeper with that sort of ability, you know. So that, look, it's work in progress with Brendan, but Brendan's mom is from Offaly, you know, so
right,
there's a tie in there as well.
Right, that's interesting. I hope you're all carpooling, or the Offaly County Board will have a heart attack when they get the separate travel expenses up from Kerry.
Actually, no, the Offaly County Board are great that way, Tommy Bourne, sure he knows that. There's no problem with that sort of thing, Colm, as you know well.
I'd say he's tearing his hair out at the end of every month.
Look, that's the County Board have a difficult job to do, you know. They, one and one has to make two at the end of every month financially, you know. So yeah. And there's a big pull in their resources, but look, there's good guys involved there, you know. There's a new supporters club, you know, headed up by Padraig Egan, who's doing Trojan work on the ground to try and get that off the ground. And look, all of these things are, look, it's probably a new chapter in the book for Offaly, you know. And you know, along with the hurlers, you know, Kevin Martin's doing a great job at the hurlers as well, you know. We're trying to look, I suppose, just trying to raise the profile of Offaly GA, you know. It's been in a downward spiral the last few years, and look, if everyone rose together, we have a chance of getting out of it, you know. But I forgot to mention one important guy as well there. Our logistics manager, Colm, he'll kill me if I forget it. That's Brian Egan. You know, he does a pile of work in the background as well, you know, for us. A lot of the, I suppose, the unseen stuff as well. Another Kerry man. He's from my own club here at our church, you know. He works above in Dublin, so he's with us as well. So,
okay,
you know, like, you know, many hands make light work and all that, but we'll never say no to any more volunteers if they're out there as well.
Yeah, look, there's no doubt about that. I'd say the Offaly fella gets no vote on picking teams at all, with the Kerry mafia voting him down at 3-1 every time. I'm only joking. Come here, talk to me about the style of football, because you're going against the trend. Like, I mean, you're Kerry man, and we know Kerry like to play more orthodox than a lot of teams. They like to kick pass a lot, you know. They play a more traditional style. Now, they're not against getting men behind the ball themselves, to do it plenty of times. That's the modern way. You're more into an attacking philosophy.
Yeah, look, suppose, look, I'm on record as saying that look, there's only one way to play the game, and I was quoted as saying it's the Kerry way. I suppose it's not as simple as that. What I'm trying to say is a lot of the traditional counties who have the best records of winning Sam Maguire, you know, the Kerrys, the Dublins, the Galways, you know, the Meaths, the Corks, you know, they tend to play football the right way. There's no blanket defences, you know, there's no 13 men behind the ball. They go out and they play, but without being, you know, without being naive enough to say that, right, you can't have yourself set up defensively at the back, but of course you have to be smart about it. But blanket defences and all this negative stuff, it's just, look, it's not how it was reared. It's not how we're coached down here in Kerry. And look, we go out to play football, and look, you'll kick a ball down a field an awful lot faster than you'll ever run down it yourself. So there's no rocket science behind it. If you can perfect it, it'll work.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I was kind of speculating on the podcast about, you know, playing that style in Division 3 where it's a dogfight in the winter months when you're playing maybe a Fermanagh who are getting lads behind the ball, and you're wondering which style kind of wins out at this time of the year.
Yeah, 100%. Look, I suppose that's maybe for another day's conversation, but look, the busiest part of the GA calendar in terms of competitive matches is played in the worst time of the year weather-wise. So, you know, you're playing in heavy conditions, you know, winter football, you know, like a couple of, you know, you're coming across pitches and look, they're barely playable. You know, that doesn't make it easy for lads to be playing this type of year. That's something that needs to be looked at. But, you know, look, we'll keep putting into practice what we're coaching on the training fields. Like, we're not, the way the games are coming so thick and fast anyway in the National League, you know, it's not like you can change your style week to week because you've only got 6 days between the game and you're out again, you know. So probably a bit more difficult this time of the year, all right, you'd be right in saying that. But look, we're not going to change our philosophy, and look, we're going to keep trying to perfect it. Whether we'll ever get there or not remains to be seen, I suppose. But look, we're going to keep trying.
Yeah, is there a little bit of pressure ahead of this game against Derry, Stephen? Because obviously, for one of the two teams, there are going to be three losses and two new managers, and you know the pressure that's involved of not getting off to a good start.
Yeah, there probably is. I suppose, look, we hit the ground running probably in the O'Gorman Cup. You know, yeah, we had a couple of good results against Wexford and against the Dubs, you know, and I suppose maybe people got a bit carried away. But, you know, people need to remember, you know, what we're dealing with within the off-league senior football panelists. You're like, of the Offaly team that played Cavan in the qualifiers last July, we've only six of them at the minute, you know.
Right.
So it's a complete changeover in squad members, you know. A lot of these guys are very young. We've six or seven up from the under-21 team that got to the Leinster final. A big step up between under-21s and senior, you know. So look, we're developing them. Is there pressure? Look, I don't think so. I think if people are realistic, look, you know, you're down Niall McNamee, Brian Darby, Owen Rigney, and Graham Guilfoyle, Rory McNamee, Rory Allen. Jeez, I mean, you can keep going. David Hanlon, Owen Carroll is injured, Keane Donoghue's injured, Peter Cunningham is just back from injury. You know, but there's no point in kind of, I suppose, look, using that as a crutch. We need to get on with it. The young fellas that are in there, they're eager, they're enthusiastic, and they're learning every night. And look, every night we come to the field that we learn something and we leave an improved or a better player. We'll eventually get there. But look, it's what, the middle of February. We're 4 months into a 3-year project. Look, there's no pressure, there's no panic. But obviously, you know, you want to get a W on the board. Like, that's
yeah,
no point kind of pussyfooting around that. But look, we'll go looking for performance on Sunday. If we get a performance, we might get a result. But once we're improving, every Sunday we're out, eventually we'll get there.
I actually had those names written down here that I was going to ask you about. Some retirements, some have opted out, work commitments, different reasons. Must be very very frustrating for a manager, because we were talking last week on the podcast about, you know, obviously having young Keane Johnson in there now, and he looks like a real, you know, talent, and wouldn't have been great for him to just have Niall McNamee there beside him just for 1 year. And that's me just looking at it as a fan. Like, imagine you coming in as a manager. Like, would you have sat down with Niall or with Brian Darby and these fellas and asked them, or was just the door closed to say, look, we're done now and that's it?
No, look, I suppose before I came on board, Niall had officially announced his retirement, and you know, I suppose look, he owes awfully nothing in the bigger scheme of things. And look, you know, I just put it out there that look, my phone is always on and the door's always open if Niall wants to have a chat. No, it hasn't happened. You know, Niall's getting on with it. He's pursuing other things in his life, and that's it. You know, I had a chat with in Derby, look, Brian again owes Offaly nothing, and look, he made a decision that he couldn't commit, you know, and he's a young family and everything, and look, that's life, we move on, you know. I suppose every county is probably looking at the what if we had this guy and what if we had that guy scenario. We don't have them, you know. Some of them will be back, you know. There's a couple of them are just out travelling at the moment. Like, hopefully they'll come back to the fold at some stage. And other guys then had issues with work commitments and what have you. And look, their circumstances might change as well. And look, with a bit of luck, they might miss it and they might be willing to commit in the future. But right now, we have what we have, Colm. And look, we have to move on with it.
Yeah, I suppose like any other county, it's about making it a squad that people want to be part of, and players text players and the word gets around. It's a good setup. You've often seen examples of lads not committing, then hearing how good it is. I think it's Neil McGee, actually. Eamon McGee, when Jim McGuinness took over, Neil McGee used to come home from training saying how good it was, and suddenly he wanted to get back in after not really being too bothered. Maybe, you know, players text each other and that word gets around. I want to ask you about Keane Johnson there, because you were obviously from Kerry and you would have seen an awful lot of good players down through the years down there. Like, how good is Keane? Because I have to admit, outside of seeing his scoring returns and his age that he's in the leaving cert, I haven't seen too much of him.
Yeah, I know. Look, he can definitely play, Colm. I suppose, look, he was probably fast-tracked into the team, to be honest. You know, we hadn't planned in getting him in this early. But look, if a guy is good enough, he's old enough, then look, he was shown at training that he's well able to mind himself, he's able to look after himself, and he's a damn good footballer. But the reality is, look, he puts on a school uniform every morning, you know, to go to school. You know, I sound like Arsene Wenger now saying he's only a kid and kids win nothing sort of a thing, but he is only a kid, you know, so he's a lot of developing to do, a lot of learning to do. Would he benefit from a year with Niall McNamee? Jeez, maybe he wouldn't, because Niall mightn't give him the ball if Niall was there. So Keane might have regressed, you know. So but he's definitely a talent, and look, he's one to watch. But you know, for the future, you know, I wouldn't be heaping pressure on the kid.
Yeah, you're into the SBG. I'm wondering where you get the time to do anything now when you've got 3 hours up, 3 hours down, and we know how busy. That's probably three times a week. There's pictures on your Twitter of John Kavanagh. You a straight blast, Jim? A bit of a Kieran McGeaney in you there.
Yeah, not for a while though. You hit the nail on the head there. I actually haven't been over to the lads in Killarney in a long time. I just haven't got time, you know. But look, it's a passion of mine for many years, and it's just, you know, I suppose it's something that I'm into. And look, big fan of MMA, big fan of the UFC for a long, long time before it became mainstream. And look, John is a good guy. He's helped me out with a few things in the past as well, you know. And look, he loved to train with a great crew in SBG in Killarney when I get the time. Not that I'm much good at it, but you know, it's a great way to clear your head, you know. Like I say, when there's a guy trying to choke the life out of you on Monday night, maybe at 9 o'clock, the rest of the week can be very easy after that. It's a great sport.
I did it with Kieran McGeaney there not so long ago, and it didn't work out too well for me. I'm just wondering, did you bring the Offaly lads up there? Because he had the Armagh lads in straight blast, Jim, in Dublin, I'm pretty sure, in the off-season.
Yeah, look, Kieran's at it a very long time. You know, Kieran will be high level jiu-jitsu grappler, you know. I think he's a purple belt at his age, you know. So he's a different breed of an animal now, Colm, to be trying to fool around with, you know. But it's something that GA players can benefit from, you know, in terms of, you know, and flexibility, you know, control your breathing, and you know, I suppose it's a big change to your body as well. You know, your brain can kind of panic when you're on the ground. And you know, a lot of these collisions in GA now, you know, you can find yourself on the ground, and it's something we're not used to, because obviously we spend most of our life on our 2 feet, you know.
Yeah.
This is what I find, it kind of trains the brain into a different scenario as well. And look, a lot of the Dublin lads are into it as well. And look, I suppose it's the proof of the pudding is in the eating, maybe, you know.
Yeah, no, definitely. Come here, so what's that? What will you see your 3 years with Offaly as being a success? Where will Offaly be when you finish up in 3 years?
I'll win the All-Ireland, Colin. That's a no-brainer.
When you look at it, like, Leinster Championship realistically is out of the question, All-Ireland Championship's out of the question, and that's the same for my county as well, because Dublin are so strong. Yeah. So, you know, what can you build towards?
Yeah, well, look, I suppose, look, the aim would be to have Offaly in Division 2. That's where you have to go up the divisions in order to progress yourself as a footballer and to improve. So if we can get up into Division 2, you know, they're playing better teams again, you know, so you've more challenges ahead. If we can get up there and improve, that gives you an opportunity, I suppose, within Leinster to possibly go to a Leinster final, depending on how the draw falls for you, because I don't think any other Leinster manager would disagree with this. I suppose there isn't a whole lot between a lot of the other counties in Leinster, if you take Dublin out of it, and I suppose maybe Kildare have moved on a small bit in the recent past with Tian. You know, so the look of a draw, as Westmeath have proved the last couple of years, you know, they've got a couple of Leinster finals. You know, that could happen. Are you going to beat the Dubs? Sure, obviously not. You know, we're realistic enough to realise that. Look, Division 2, and look, bit of luck if you get to Leinster final, that'd be a kind of a bonus territory, I suppose.
Yeah, it's gas. It's exactly how I would be thinking about Laois. You know, it's a realistic target. And you're right, a lot of counties outside maybe Kildare who would have better aspirations would be exactly saying, make a Leinster final, and we maybe Meath want to get into Division 1. And it's a weird one, as in Leinster is an awful province in that you'll never win it, but it's a good province, as in you could get to a final in Croke Park, which a lot of, you know, provinces wouldn't offer you that kind of opportunity.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Look, your own county there, you know, my good buddy Mr. Shooker is probably thinking the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
So look, and that's, you know, I suppose, look, Thurrock is doing a super job below in Carlo. Wicklow raised a gala under Evans this year, you know. Longford are flying, you know. Longford are 3 years in with Dennis, and look at what look they're making strides in Division 3. And Westmeath again, you know, with Colin Kelly, who did such a great job with Louth, you know, all of those counties are realistically they're looking at a Leinster final as well, you know, which is from a competitive point of view, it's a great position then in Leinster, you know.
Yeah, listen, there's no doubt it will. Listen, Stephen, we've taken up enough of your time. Thanks very much for taking the call, and best of luck at the weekend.
Not at all, my pleasure. Call him anytime. Thanks.
Conan Doherty was a fantastic analyst, and I mean, I really heed what he would say in your programme.
I think Tyrone are going to win. I'm going to go with them. As much as I predicted Dublin to win the All-Ireland at the start of the year, I just think Tyrone are going too well. They're unaffected by the other team. Too well set up. I think they've been preparing for Dublin for 2 years. They're ready for them. I'm going to go with them here.
Yeah, so we weren't even scheduled to do a podcast today, Conan, but obviously the rescheduled games are on this weekend. So we have Monaghan and Kerry, and that's on TG4. It's the deferred game. It's on at 2:30, but TG4 is showing it. So we'll be able to do a podcast on Monday, maybe, and focus on that game. We have Cavan Meath, which for some weird reason we were excited to see because we haven't seen too many games from Division 2. We have Derry and Offaly, two teams not going very well, like both teams under a bit of pressure to win that one. Also at the weekend we have the All-Ireland Club semi-final with Moorfield and Corrifin. We mentioned that at the top of the show. We have a rescheduled Connacht FBD game and a McKenna Cup game that I'm not even going to mention because they're an irrelevance, especially at this time of the year when there's more important things to talk about. The Monaghan Kerry one is interesting because I haven't seen Monaghan yet this year, and you know, like a lot of the talk at the end of last year, almost like a similar narrative to Tyrone. Dublin embarrassed them in Croke Park. Ciarán McManus, their talisman, has came out, I think it was at the International Rules, saying that they're going to have to change their system of play a little bit and tweak it and leave a few more forwards up. Remember me going on about Monaghan at the start of the year last year against Fermanagh, where they've so many men back, then they have McCarron and McManus at the other end of the field, and they've just such a gap between the two, there's no way of transitioning easily. They only have one method of transitioning from defence up to them, and that's by running the ball. And by running the ball, the other team is tracking you at the same pace you're going, so there's never an opportunity to beat those retreating players with a kick to the half forward line. So maybe that's something we'll be looking out for on Sunday, because Kerry, as we know, well, they'll get men behind the ball at certain points of the game, they will try to line out orthodox. So because they'll line out fairly orthodox, you'll get a very good idea of the way Monaghan are trying to line out their team this year.
Yeah, and like I think I backed Monaghan to win Ulster last year. Like even
I did too. Yeah,
they weren't going amazingly in the league, but you just I think the fact that Jack McCarron came in and it was like, all right, they have this extra player now, and he didn't. he didn't kick on in the championship, actually so much so that he was, it wasn't that good for him in the championship. I mean, we thought he was going to be a main man alongside McManus, but even just that, boys like McCarthy were coming through then. He scored 6 points for UCD last night, so he's obviously still going well. Dugan just started showing up out of nowhere, so I thought they had these half forwards that were going to be those link men that you were talking about that they didn't have, and
yeah,
it's probably happened too much for them. I don't know, are they trying to, is their season too long, like are they hitting the league too often, too hard?
I think they could be, yeah, like I mean, but they have to, or else they'll find themselves in Division 2. They can't hit the league like a Dublin or like a, you know, although Kerry seems to be focused on it, they just won't stay in that league without hitting it like that.
Because so, their own go up and down, you know, like, and they don't really care about going up and down. And yeah, like
they went down for 1 year, did they not?
Yeah.
Tyrone are a very serious league team.
And I know, like, the Dublin thing obviously, like, made their thing, but they look fresh and they would look like a spring in their step come the summer. Like, and Monaghan, it never seems that way, they just seem to peter out as the season goes along.
Yeah, no, they do. A couple of interesting players sent a message to Malachy Clerkin about some information on Monaghan, because, like, I mean, it's a disaster when you just don't know, you haven't seen these lads. There's a new lad, David Garland, who's playing corner forward. So, like, I mean, he's a small enough player, but he's a forward. He's not a fella that's going to be tracking back. So, like, they could have this fella Garland, who's new. They'll have McManus. They'll have McCarron. They'll have McCarthy. Like, they're four forwards that are not tracking forwards. Yeah. So maybe you might have a situation. You've Ryan McInnesby, who's played wing forward in their two games so far, and he's playing wing forward for UCD. So that's a new thing, right? So if you play, they're playing like maybe four attacking forwards. Maybe their two wing forwards can still go back and help. So playing Ryan McInnesby there, it's new, and it's maybe an indication that, right, we're trying to get the balance here right, because if we're playing four, which is a departure from what we've done, then the two going back are going to have to be bloody good defensively minded players.
Yeah, and well, all the talk last year was that O'Rourke was going as well, like, and obviously for whatever reason, like, you know, we decided to stay on, and you know, whether he sees something, whether the players want them to stay on, like, that always is an indication to me that there's something else there that they don't think that they've gotten yet.
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly. And of a new fella as well, so Malachy was telling me, is Barry McGinn. So he was ready to make the breakthrough last year and he did his cruciate. So he's another target man, full forward, who you wouldn't imagine will be doing a load of tracking, and you'd imagine that he's going to feature in the league this year. So, like, I mean, there you go. So if these are the new fellas, you expect Monaghan to be leaving four up. That's the way. And genuinely, if I was managing a team in the morning, well, obviously depends on what players you have, there would be four left up and the rest, what have you got left? You have four left up and a defender, so you have 10 defending. You have 10 defending when you need to defend. And if you've got 10 defending, try and make a case for 10 men inside the 45. So you have 6 marking and then you have 4 plugging holes. And if you have these fellas tuned in and attacking the ball and, you know, tracking runs, Jesus, that should be enough. And then when you win the ball back, you have those 2.5 forward liners, split them 1-1 and 2. You could split them 2-1 and 1. You know, have a little formation up the other end of the field, a little tricky one with loads of movement. When that ball's turned over, there's availability. Do you know, like, I mean, I really don't. I think the easy way out is just to do it and say, all right, ye all go back and then ye all attack. And I don't know. I think there's more coaching involved in having
transition
actual forwards. Like, it's hard to coach forwards. I think coaching a forward is much more difficult than coaching a back.
Could we have 11 back? Can we compromise there and have one more body back
and 3 up?
I'm just one on the 45 and then 2 inside. Like, it's tough because, like, I just keep thinking, and it's what everyone's thinking about when you go to Crewe Park and play Dublin. Maybe the Super 8s completely changes that, but Dublin are like a basketball team where everyone goes forward and everyone comes back, and it's hard not to fall into that when everyone else is so preoccupied with these best players in the country, and it's hard to back yourself just to be like, oh well, they'll be fine with that man over. The man over is always like Johnny Cooper or Jack McCaffrey, you know. It's hard just to let them go and say we're leaving four here. Maybe if you caught Dublin then they won't be so gung-ho about it, but I don't know what the solution is, because they are going to push everyone forward to try and outnumber your men, and they'll back themselves because they're obviously fitter and faster than everyone else.
Yeah, I think Dublin, like, I mean, so many counties can play this way without having to worry about Dublin. Kildare play that way. Kildare play similar to Dublin, but Kildare have to worry about Dublin. Like, I don't think Monaghan should be basing their tactics around Dublin, because, like, I mean, you know, maybe Tyrone might have to, it's hard to know. Like, I think Kerry have to base their tactics around, because it's inevitable that they're going to have to beat Dublin. And Mayo, like, actually Mayo just go play Dublin. Like, they get players back, but Mayo caused Dublin, I'll tell you why Mayo caused Dublin problems, and we're digressing here a little bit, and we must have mentioned on the podcast, is because Dublin have played so many defensive teams that Mayo come out and caused them so many different problems. Dublin just aren't ready for it.
Yeah.
Dublin aren't ready for having a man on the half back line and actually a full forward line breaking under space. So he kicks it to them, not really used to this, and the kick, you know what I mean, it might go astray or Mayo get a fist in.
Yeah.
They're just not ready for this. They're ready to be low risk, they're ready to be hand passing the ball through the hands, and Dublin never make mistakes, and Mayo make Dublin make mistakes by maybe giving them that little bit more space.
It is interesting, like, even I was at Croke Park on Saturday, and it's a total mismatch, but these mismatches happen. Like, you know, Michael Dara McCauley trying to keep out Ryan McHugh, and he looked absolutely knackered, you know, trying, like, you know, McHugh just ran around basically, and he was just left tracking him 15 metres behind then. And you're like, geez, these boys are just, they're, like, it's an old saying, but they're just skin and bones, like, and they do sweat and tire like everyone else. But what happened with Donegal in the first half as well, that they all just shit themselves to see the blue jersey, to play that, and then they pop it off to the next man and they throw it off so somebody else can make the mistake, and they don't, Mayo take them on because they believe that they're as big and strong and fast as them.
And they are, in fairness to Mayo, they're the one team that seem to be able to match them on a physical and fitness level, and have no fear of them either, which is a big thing. Kerry, probably the only other team that deep down don't fear them. Maybe Tyrone as well, because they're a little bit crazy like that.
Maybe last year might have stung
them. That traditionally, no, but I think they've started to fear them now. So Kerry are going to be without Jack Barry O'Sullivan, and Brian O'Sheenacon, who I don't know too much about. Maybe that's an Irish name of an English name, I'm not too sure, shouldn't be saying that out loud, it should be going on inside my head. So they're out because they're with UCD, and we know Kerry are hitting this league you know, hard enough. The only, like, caveat you'd have with Kerry is like the example with Donegal last year. So they were a new team, young players, mad to prove themselves, so Kerry are almost hitting the league with a completely different mindset than they would have had in previous years, where there's more experienced players coming back and easing themselves into it and struggling in the league with a bigger picture ahead. They're like Donegal, and Donegal last year were a kick of a ball, a loss to Mayo in the last game from getting into a league final against Dublin, and then they bombed because the young lads went to Clonus against Tyrone with a huge spotlight shone on them and weren't really able for that step up. Because I remember I was going to talk to Stevie about this, because I was interested to know what he was like coming up from under 21, because when we did with Laois in, so in 96 we won minor, 97 we won minor, 98 they were in a final, so we were in an Ireland under 21 final against star studded Kerry team in 98, and we lost that by 2 points in the end. Kerry went 2-1 to no score up after 5 minutes, but we battled back, so we're on a fairly decent par with that Kerry team, and about 7 or 8 of them won All-Irelands. But we brought 7 of that team into the Laois team that summer, the championship team. Now, it was too many, but we beat Westmeath in our first game, and we were like, right, geez, we're at the senior level. A lot of young lads played well. Now, Westmeath weren't a super force or anything, but it was a senior match in Croke Park. We all did well. Next game, we played Kildare. This is a Kildare team that got to the All-Ireland final that year. It was a totally different ball game. Like, oh my God. Just like, these were like proper grown men that, like, you remember Nooks or Books, you just throw me aside. This was proper.
Was that that game?
That was that game. This was just men against chaps. 7 was too many. So, like, Kerry need to be, like, one thing about the league for Kerry this year is that they're playing the Mayos, and they seem to be fairly intense games. Whereas when we were under 21, we mightn't have played that many league games because we were reminding ourselves that the focus was under 21. But the league is definitely going to help these lads. But the big difference between the league and the championship is that it's faster, it's on better ground, and there's way more media spotlight. You know, the whole experience is a totally different ballgame. So, like, I mean, even if Kerry go well in this league, we still will have our doubts about them until we see these lads in championship football.
Yeah, but maybe that's why they're going hard. They want that final again as well, Croke Park against Dublin.
I think they will need that. I think Kerry need that badly.
Yeah, and, like, again, it's the problem with the structures or the provincial thing. But Kerry can hit the league hard, because once they finish the league, they've nothing until July. They're going to win the Munster Championship, play 2 games, piss games that they'll walk through.
Yeah.
And then they'll worry again in July. So they'll end in March and then worry again in July. So they can go up and down. Whereas a team like Monaghan, who granted aren't as good as Kerry, but they have to hit the Ulster Championship again just as hard and stuff. And it's that longer road that they'd be on.
Yeah, no, exactly. So look, this will be a really interesting game to have a look at on Monday with Keane in here. The other games, we might as well do predictions here because we're not going to focus too much. We've obviously talked to Stephen Wallace about the Offaly Derry game, and Meath Cavan is like, I mean, that's a local derby, and like, there's no point in saying anything else. It could go either way. I think, like Keane was saying last Monday, last week was a really good time for Meath to play Cavan because we know Cavan are not playing with their full deck. Meath have a pretty strong deck to play with, so like, I mean, I'd fancy Meath in this one, although Breffni Park, I never really like playing there too much. It's a little bit boggy, especially at this time of the year, so that might suit Cavan. So we'll go predictions in all these games. I'm refusing to do predictions in these two pre-season games that are being pushed upon us at this time of the year when they should be just forgotten about. So we'll go Monaghan Kerry first.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Kerry. They're going well. They've got enough talent. They go beat Monaghan. Monaghan just seem to be, and I'm trying to get out of the gears at the minute, so I'm going to go with Kerry.
Yeah, I think I'll go with Kerry there too. Cavan Meath is a difficult one.
Go with Cavan just because they're at home.
Yeah, just to go up against me here. Well, I'll go Meath on that one. And I do take your point that home advantage is huge in any of the divisions. National Football League Division 3, this is Derry Offaly. This is a relegation scrap. Will we call it a relegation scrap this early? Probably.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The two Derry lads walked out of the panel there as well, Kieran McFall and
that's not good, is it?
It's not. I mean, the funny thing is, it's because they're going travelling in the summer or they're going to America, and like, Derry are going to play one or two games in the summer, or two or three games. So most of their games are happening now. So why not just keep them, try and stay in Division 3 and let them go away in the summer?
Yeah, so it's a real weird one, that one, because, like, I mean, they were upfront and honest about it. We've actually seen this happen before. So because they're going in the summer, I would be the same as you. I'd still be using them until the end of March.
Yeah.
I would say when the end of March finishes and the league is done, you start your championship preparations, you say thanks very much, lads.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be getting rid of them in the middle of the league. Were they gotten rid of, or did they walk away? Like, I'd imagine they were gotten rid of, because otherwise why would they walk away after committing in the first place?
Yeah, well, it was a story in the Derry Post, and it was just basically they're going away in the summer, and then the story is that they're no longer part of the panel. So I don't know if they walked away or they were gotten rid of, but you'd imagine that if they're going to, in February, to say, by the way, we're not here in June.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it has to be a decision of the managers, I don't know. But Derry are in a bad way. I know you're probably going to back them here just because they're at home, and Derry still looks like a nice name, but
still on paper you think Derry are good, and it's not the reality. Like, Leash are the same. Like, I mean, Leash two relegations in a row, and the whole story is Leash won't go down again.
Yeah.
Like, I was in denial last year. What happened? Absolutely not. Right up until the last minute or two of the Offaly game, someone will get a goal, they'll stay up. They only needed to beat Offaly on the last day, and I was still like, don't worry about this. So this is under control.
I was sort of falling into this going, it's Offaly. Like, sure, we'll beat Offaly. But, like, even, like, look at Derry's team last year, which wasn't good, and for this game now they're missing six of the back seven that played against Mayo. So, like, three of them are Sloughneil boys, but you know, three of them aren't there anymore. They're missing a midfielder, Niall Loughlin, their best forward last year. So that team, which wasn't that good last year, isn't even there this year. So this is like the third or fourth generation of a poor enough Derry team anyway.
It really is down to the bare bones. It's down to the bare bones. Then we have Stephen Wallace talking to us earlier on the show, who believes in an attacking style of football, which, like, I mean, that's fair enough. I think in Division 3, like, they've lost to Longford badly and they've lost to Fermanagh, two teams that get some men behind the ball. So, like, I mean, wanting to play this kind of attacking football against a team that likes to counter-attack you, I don't know. You can get caught on the counter-attack without being conservative against these. So, like, I mean, it's always difficult. Like, styles, this is always the thing about this. Like, styles make fights. And, like, I mean, one team playing defensive isn't the end. I think genuinely I'm against ultra defensive, but the four forwards thing, like, if another team wants to play attacking against them, isn't it interesting to see how one team will break the other down? With, like, Dublin against Tyrone, like, Dublin just have it cracked now, but other teams, they might not have it cracked. We saw Mayo against Cavan, for example, in the league last year, where they were caught on the break six or seven times against Cavan and beaten.
Caught by Derry a few times.
Caught by Derry,
time,
which is very interesting to see a team being hit on the break, and then you see another team not getting, like, it's, do people not find that interesting? Like, I mean, without that, then it's just everyone doing the same thing.
It's just the best team beating the worst team.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why I'm trying to say the last 2 years on this show.
Yeah, but you want the 14 behind the ball. Right, All-Ireland Club Senior Championship Final, a huge one here for Moorfield and Cara Finn.
Are you going Derry or Offaly?
I'm going Derry. Oh, sorry, I'll go Derry.
I'll go Derry as well for the crack.
Yeah, I think that is an awful... To be fair, Celtic Park is an awful place to go and it's a lot of travelling for Offaly. And that
Derry fans don't like going to Celtic Park either.
It's an awful place to go even for Derry these days. Moorfield and Cara Finn, we're going to go... Well, Cara Finn, you'd be mad probably not to go for Cara Finn, although they let us down last year at this stage and lost to Dr. Crokes. They were very, very poor on the day. Maybe we'll give credit to Crokes. But I think they're operating on a level that just Moorfield won't be able to handle, like the Farrahers, Sice, Lundy, Burke, all these fellas in the forwards, the real strong midfield. They're just a better all round team than Moorfield. I think the Leinster teams that can potentially put it up to the Cara Finns, the Crokes, all these usually good teams come out of Connacht. Slochneils are the Dublin champions and Portlaoise. Genuinely, not just saying that because I'm biased, I think Moorfield caught Portlaoise on the hop that day and Portlaoise left it behind them. I think Moorfield won't lack for fight and for heart. And you know, they have to be unbelievably given unbelievable credit for how they won that Leinster. And I just think this will be a step up too high for Moorfield.
I completely agree with you. Yeah, Cara Finn look like they have that sit back as well from the All-Ireland winning team, like they look sharp again.
I think when Cara Finn are on song, they're the best club team in the country. Vincent's are up there too. I think Vincent's and Cara Finn are up there as the two best, and Slochneil and Crokes are just one little step below them, but not by much.
Cora Finn are just a textbook team. Like, if you want to show anyone how to play football, watch Cora Finn.
Yeah, they are. They're a great team. Right, listen, that's all we've time for. We did well. We got to an hour, just the two of us, Conan. So we won't make it a habit, but look, at least we can do it when we need to do it.
I bet you nobody else got to an hour, just the two of us.
There's nobody has left. Nobody has stayed listening for the hour. That is shocking. If you've stayed for the full hour, please let me know on Twitter. I'm really interested to know if anybody. We should say something really crazy now and see. Test out has.
Talking about Donald Trump again.
Right, we'll talk to you on Monday. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back to their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.